This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. Initiative 1631 concerns pollution. This measure would charge pollution fees on sources of greenhouse gas pollutants and use the revenue to reduce pollution, promote clean energy, and address climate impacts. Should this measure be enacted into law by voters in the November 6, 2018 general election? To help answer this question, I have as my guest Ahmed Gaya, field director of Yes on 1631. Welcome, Ahmed.
Thanks for having me.
Why 1631? What is the purpose of the initiative?
1631 is a practical first step to dealing with climate pollution and air pollution here in Washington state, to building a stronger and healthier Washington that we can lead to for our children and our grandchildren, which I think we have an obligation to do, and to making clean energy more affordable for more people across Washington state so we can dramatically expand clean energy and make it accessible to all of our communities.
Could you just highlight what the initiative proposes?
So the initiative puts a fee on the largest corporate polluters in the state for their climate pollution, and it reinvests that money into making clean energy more affordable for people across the state and cleaning up pollution. So directly cleaning up air pollution across the state and expanding clean energy. And it does so focusing on investments in the communities most impacted by pollution in the state.
What price will be put on carbon?
Yeah, so it's a fee of $15 a ton on the carbon content of fossil fuels used by the largest polluters in the state.
And how will that change over time?
So that fee, it goes up according to whether or not we're hitting our targets. So it's tied to the Washington state greenhouse gas emissions targets, and it increases until, you know, we're hitting those targets and we're on track to actually deal with pollution. And that's because we know that if we don't deal with pollution now, especially climate pollution, the problem is only going to get worse. So we have to take action now to address the problem and leave a healthier future to our kids and grandkids.
Could you go into more detail about who will actually pay the carbon fee, the types of companies that will pay?
Yeah. So the fee is paid by the largest corporate polluters in the state, folks that are bringing fossil fuels into the state for the most part. So that's folks like the oil companies, utilities that are using fossil fuels or bringing in coal by wire, and some fuel distributors.
Which polluting industries are exempt from the fee, and why were they exempted?
So at the end of the day, this is about building clean energy infrastructure across Washington state. That's one of the best ways that we're going to get Washington off of oil. And if we're going to do that, we want to build that infrastructure with products that are made cleanly and made here in Washington. So the initiative allows flexibility for industries that are trade exposed and energy intensive. Every mile of light rail we build, every wind farm we build is going to need aluminum and concrete. So those two industries, for example, have flexibility so that we can make sure that when we're building light rail, when we're building wind power in Washington, we're using aluminum and concrete that's made in Washington state at lower emissions with, you know, our hydropower and made with good union jobs here in Washington.
To what extent is the proposed fee likely to cause a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions? How do we know this will actually reduce pollution?
Cool. Well, there's been a number of studies looking at it that shows that it will reduce pollution. The fee is directly tied to the state's pollution reduction goals. So, you know, it's directly tied to that. And it's estimated from those studies that it'll release at least 20 million tons of pollution every year.
To what extent will the proposed exemption affect the reduction in greenhouse gas emissions?
It's relatively minor, so it's, you know, only a small percentage of the emissions overall. And at the end of the day, the big way that we reduce emissions here in Washington state is by investing in our state, by expanding clean energy and making it more affordable for more people. So the big driver of our emissions reductions are actually the investments that we make. And that's what allows us to help create over 40,000 new jobs across the state and invest in communities that have been hurt the hardest by pollution. 35% of the investments we make have to be geographically in those communities that face the worst pollution across the state. Those are the communities that we're going to be helping create good jobs in the green economy. And those are also some of the communities, unsurprisingly, which are disproportionately affected by other things. They're communities which are disproportionately poorer, often rural communities, places that we want to invest in helping both clean their air and reduce pollution, and also help in building thriving economies there in the clean energy economy.
If 1631 is enacted, how much money will be raised annually?
The estimates that we have say they raise about $1 billion a year for investments across the state, which is a big opportunity for Washington. It's a huge investment in our state, an investment in, like I said, helping create over 40,000 jobs in the clean energy economy, and a huge investment, especially in these communities like rural communities, low-income communities that disproportionately face pollution and the impacts of climate change.
What are some specific examples of the types of projects that the money could be used for?
Yeah, so it runs the gamut. There are some projects, for example, directly in building out clean energy infrastructure, like wind farms and solar farms, a really beautiful example of the transition from fossil fuels to clean energy is happening down in Centralia, where on an old coal mine, we're seeing the largest solar farm in the state being constructed. So projects like that could receive funding. Also invests in public transportation, the electrification, for example, of bus fleets around the state, especially in a lot of these smaller communities, which don't have the resources to bring on newer electric vehicles into their public transportation fleets, and where their vehicles are older and tend to be polluting more. And so, you know, that's leading to greater impacts of pollution from diesel and particulates in those communities. And then lastly, we're investing in our natural resources. I think it became really clear to all of us this summer the impacts of forest fires, both here in Washington and around the region. So we're investing in our forests and investing in clean and abundant water in Washington state, because those are two of the places we see the problem of climate pollution directly impacting our resources right now.
What are some examples of forest projects that might be supported by money from the initiative?
One thing I will say is if you go to our website, yeson1631.org, there is a map there which shows you about 150 projects all across the state which are ready for investments from this initiative and could be invested in were 1631 be passed tomorrow. And that's really exciting, and it's an opportunity for folks all over the state to kind of play around and see what's happening in their region. And I would just also qualify that that map is not all inclusive. It is an example of some of the projects. So there's a lot of things around their state. One project on that map that I know we have a video for and I'm really excited about is the Chimicum Ridge Community Forest Project out in the Olympic Peninsula, which helps establish a community forest, which both helps build the local economy with long-term stewardship and forest products economy in that area, helps build resiliency for the local ecology, and helps, you know, deal with the threat of wildfire.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Ahmad Gaya, field director of Yes on 1631, an initiative which would charge pollution fees on sources of greenhouse gas pollutants and use the revenue to reduce pollution, promote clean energy, and address climate impacts. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. So the cost of the carbon fee would likely be passed on to consumers from the companies that are required to pay. What would you say to those who are concerned about the price of gasoline going up, for example?
Well, I think the first thing to point out is that the oil companies have spent so far over $11 million to, you know, spread and to put that information out into the world. The oil companies, big oil, folks like Chevron, BP, Andover, which is formerly Tesoro, they wouldn't be spending millions of dollars if this wasn't going to impact their bottom line. The reason the oil companies are spending millions of dollars to defeat Initiative 1631 is because they don't want to pay the fee. And they know that if this is put in place, they will have to. So at the end of the day, this is a fee on large polluters. What Washington state residents get out of this is they get a cleaner, healthier environment, a more thriving and prosperous state they can pass to their kids. They get helping create over 40,000 new clean energy jobs. And they get tens of thousands of dollars of savings in the healthcare impacts that we face from pollution every single year here in Washington state that we'll get from cleaning up that pollution here in Washington. And, you know, if the oil companies, if they make the choice, they are the most profitable companies in the history of money. So to say that they are required to pass their costs on to consumers is, you know, not necessarily accurate. But if that happens, well, our estimates show that the average household shouldn't see an increase of more than $10 a month.
And how will low-income individuals be protected from potential increases in the price of products caused by the carbon fee?
So our initiative was written in direct partnership by low-income communities and communities of color. Those are the people that are opposition, the big oil companies, claim to care about. And the reason that over 60 organizations representing communities of color and low-income communities came together to help write this initiative and are working so intensely to pass it is because they know that it's the right thing to do for their communities. First of all, many of these communities, low-income communities and communities of color around our state, are the ones that face the worst impacts of pollution every single day. And so they have a real stake in cleaning up pollution in their communities. They're also the people that are going to benefit from direct investments. And like I said, helping to create over 40,000 new jobs across Washington through investments in clean energy and our natural resources. Those investments, 35% of them, being directed into the communities most impacted by pollution. And the bottom income earners in Washington state, the initiative mandates that some of the revenue from the initiative be spent to shield them from any increase in costs. And that could come in a lot of different ways. It could come in bill rebates and their utilities. It could come in fuel assistance. The initiative doesn't spell out exactly how, because we know that people in different parts of the state have different needs, and we need to be able to be flexible to meet those needs.
How are Native American communities specifically included in the initiative?
One of the beautiful things about this initiative is, once again, the incredible coalition that has been built around it. We have the largest and most diverse coalition ever assembled behind any ballot initiative in Washington state history. And that includes many of the tribal nations here in Washington state formally endorsed, as well as the affiliated tribes of Northwest Indians, which represents many Washington, as well as tribes outside of the state who have endorsed as an organization and are putting a lot of support into helping pass this initiative. So the first thing is recognizing that tribal nations are sovereign governments. And so they have to be treated when crafting law in that way. They're different than organizations or other constituencies because they're elected governments that have a government-to-government relationship with the state of Washington. They also are major stewards of our public lands and the lands in Washington state on their, you know, tribal lands. So a really exciting thing is both many of the tribal nations in the state, like I said, as well as State Lands Commissioner Hillary Franz, have endorsed this initiative. So the stewards of the vast majority of the public land in Washington state have endorsed this and say that it's the right thing, specifically because of a lot of these investments that we make into natural resources in Washington state that are going to, you know, help promote and protect their way of life and help promote and steward the lands which they maintain.
If the initiative is enacted, who will decide which projects to fund?
So the initiative creates a public board made up of stakeholders from communities that are directly impacted, from the clean energy industry, from workers in the fossil fuel industry. It's a really amazing process because it's about the philosophy that brought us together to build this coalition. Once again, the largest and most diverse coalition to propose an initiative in Washington state history, that everybody has a stake in dealing with the problem of pollution and everybody has a role in helping clean it up. So this public board convenes a number of stakeholders, which will evaluate the projects that are proposed and how the money should be funded to these projects to help spur both the creation of green energy jobs in Washington and reduce pollution in the state. And that means that, you know, right now we see the oil companies exerting a vastly disproportionate influence on making our energy policy in Washington state. And that's what we're seeing in this initiative battle, where the oil companies are able to just throw around over $10 million, and we know more is coming to try and write energy policy and write our future for Washingtonians. Creating a public board, which is insulated from that, which allows stakeholders from a wide spectrum of communities to come together and make these decisions, allows us to make our decisions for Washington's future and not put those in the hand of the oil companies.
And who will appoint the board?
The governor appoints the board.
And what will be the accountability? How will the results of the initiative be tracked for effectiveness?
The board makes those decisions, and there's a lot of layers of accountability within that, and it does so in coordination with a number of government agencies, including the Department of Ecology and the Department of Commerce, to make sure that we're being as effective as possible with spending this money.
How is Initiative 1631 different from Initiative 732, the carbon tax initiative that failed in 2016?
Well, the first thing I'll say is that we're very happy and excited that the backers of that initiative, Carbon Washington, were an early endorser of Initiative 1631 and have thrown their weight behind passing this now and recognize, as they did then, that if we don't deal with the problem of pollution, it's only going to get worse. So it is urgent that we take action now to steward the health and prosperity of our state for future generations. The big differences are that we reinvest the revenue that's collected from the initiative into actually dealing with the problem of pollution, stewarding our natural resources, and expanding clean energy and making it more affordable for more people. And that's why our initiative is a carbon fee, because a fee is a legal structure different than what the previous initiative was, which mandates legally that the revenue raised must go into investing into cleaning up pollution and expanding clean energy.
What are the prospects for I-1631 passing?
Well, we know a strong majority of Washingtonians want clean energy and want clean air, and they see the kind of action we're proposing as critical and important. However, we also know over 10 million and much more, 11 million and what more money from the oil industry spreading misinformation about this initiative is a formidable opponent. So we don't have and we can't match the oil industry dollar for dollar telling the truth. What we do have is a tremendous and amazing community of passionate volunteers and a movement across the state, which is working hard to ensure that their neighbors on a neighbor-to-neighbor basis know the truth about Initiative 1631, know what it would do for their communities, and know to vote for it in November. So we had over 2,300 volunteers who gathered over 350,000 signatures to get us on the ballot in just 12 weeks. It was a tremendous outpouring of support from the community, and that has continued. We now are seeing over 450 volunteers this week going out, knocking on doors, making phone calls for this initiative. That's something you're not going to see from the oil industry. You're just going to see dollars being spent on TV ads and deceptive mailers going out to people. And at the end of the day, we believe what's going to win this election, which I will admit, it's going to be hard because it's hard to fight against that much money. But what's going to win it is going to be those neighbor-to-neighbor conversations. So folks, they care about this and they want to get involved, the best thing they can do. And I am the field director, so that is my job, is to come volunteer with the campaign, which they can do at yeson1631.org/volunteer.
Okay, well, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
You were just listening to Ahmed Gaya, field director of Yes on 1631. For more information, check on the web at yeson1631.org. And for an opposition website, go to votenoon1631.com. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to the podcast section of KEXP's website at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening. And be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.